Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Saturday, July 14th, 2018. This is episode 1,505. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by WordPress. Reach more customers when you build your business website on WordPress.com. Plans start at just $4 a month, and you'll get 15% off any new plan purchase at WordPress.com/Tech Guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Oh, yeah, time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches, and all that jazz. 888-ASK-LEO is my number, 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. We have a website where everything, all the utterances, the pearls falling from my lips will be recorded at techguylabs.com. And the nice thing about that is you don't have to write anything down. If you hear something you want to remember or whatever, or maybe you don't agree and you're yelling at the radio, you just go to techguylabs.com and it's all there. There's a very good search. It's free. There's no sign up. So you can find out, you know, find those links or yell at me or whatever. Techguylabs.com. Much more effective yell at me there than on the radio. I can't hear you on the radio. Amazingly enough, on the radio. This was a fun week. This was a fun week. I consider the fun part of my job new stuff, new toys, right? The bad part of my job is telling you how stuff breaks and all the hacking and, you know. The good part is, oh, there's new toys. And the best part is when a new toy comes out, in between the time that it's announced and the time you actually can use it, there's this brief honeymoon where you can think, maybe this time. They've fixed everything, and it's all going to be wonderful. Maybe this time. So Microsoft announced a new Surface. Surface is the Microsoft brand for its computers, its Windows 10 computers. Now, I bet a lot of people think, oh, yeah, Microsoft's always made computers, right? Kind of like Apple's always made computers. But Microsoft was a software company until very recently. They had keyboards and mice. They made accessories. They even made a Microsoft DOS board for the original Apple II, but they never were a PC manufacturer. They always thought, well, we don't want to get in the way of the people who buy Windows to make personal computers. You know, those are our partners, so we don't want to mess with them, compete with them. But for some reason, a few years ago, they changed their tune, and they started making these Surface PCs. And at first, the Surface had some problems, there's some issues, but over time, they've become really kind of the, I would say, one of the better computers out there for running Windows. They now have, you know, the excuse they made, I think they always made to their trusted partners was, well, we're going to make the kind of reference standard Windows 10 PC, the premium product, so that leaves lots of room for you to do different things or interesting things or less expensive computers. Well, the new Surface is kind of dashing that one. It's the Surface Go. And it's sort of priced to go after the iPad, $400. So that's interesting, $400. Now, if you want a keyboard, it's going to cost you a little more. If you want a pen that supports the pen, it's going to cost you a little bit more. You can even get a mouse with it. But if you're buying it, comparing apples to apples, an iPad to a Surface Go, it's really this pretty close to the same price, maybe even a little less. And there's, of course, different variations on the Surface Go. The one you probably want is not this $400 one, but the $550 one that has more memory, 8 gigs of RAM instead of 4, that has more storage, 128 gigs of storage instead of 64. But it's a little 10-inch, like the iPad, a little 10-inch display you hold in your hands. It's very similar to the iPad, except instead of running iOS, it's running a full version of Windows. Well, it actually comes with what Microsoft calls Windows S. But you could, for free, upgrade that to Windows 10. So it's a full version of Windows if you want. Windows S is more like an iPad where you can only buy stuff from the Microsoft Store. And some people might want to use it that way, you know, kind of as a, because it's more secure, potentially more efficient, better battery life, that kind of thing. They'll be out August 2nd. I ordered one because, of course, I need to review it for you. So I'll have a review in 2 or 3 weeks. August 2nd is when that'll come. And it comes in colors, which is nice. You know, I bought the burgundy version. It's very pretty. All I have is the pen so far. It's very pretty. It also has, unlike the iPad, a slot for, you could put a micro SD card in there. You can add more memory or more storage. So I'm adding a 256 gig micro SD card to it. Now that's pretty hefty. You know, that's a pretty big bunch of storage. But of course, all the attention this week for the Surface Go got eclipsed immediately when Apple, I don't think it was on purpose, but it sure did kind of squash interest in the Surface Go. Apple announced updated iMacs, or not iMacs, MacBooks, MacBook Pros to be specific. Now, let's talk about this, because if you looked at it, you probably choked when you saw the price. These are, and I've long ago given up any notion of understanding Apple's strategy or predicting what Apple's going to do. But I think this is a hint about what Apple thinks of when it thinks of Macintosh. You know, Macintosh was the bread and butter for Apple for a long time until the iPad and then the iPhone, or I guess the other way around, until the iPhone and then the iPad came out. Those touch-first devices, they're much simpler, much safer. You know, those were the devices consumers gobbled up by the billions, literally. And I think at that point, Apple said, well, maybe the Macintosh is less important to our bottom line. In fact, it is quite a bit less important to the bottom line. But there's a critical factor at play here, which is if you're going to write applications for the iPhone and the iPad, and Apple certainly wants people to do that, you pretty much have to do it on a Macintosh. And then there's a large market of creative professionals, photographers, movie makers, who really like Macintosh and want to keep using Macintosh. The pros, they call them. And I think what's happening here, I believe what's happening, all the Macs that Apple's released in the last 2 years have been aimed, very expensive, aimed at the pros, very high power, very expensive machines in the thousands of dollars. These new MacBook Pros top out at $7,000 for a laptop. A laptop. The least expensive MacBook, new MacBook Pro is $1,299. No, couldn't really call it. I would say the new ones have to be the 8th generation core, right? So the 8th generation Intel processor. Those are $1,799. That's for a 13-inch. And you have to get the touch bar. Yeah, you have to. There's no choice. The ones without the touch bars, they didn't upgrade. So $1,799. And if you want to go with a 15-inch, which most professionals want, it starts at $2,399. And if you really want it to be, you know, the top of the line i9 processor with 32 gigs of RAM, first time Apple's ever offered that on a laptop, but pros want it. And if you really want that, and you really want the graphics, Radeon Pro graphics, and you really want a big hard drive, you can go up to 4 terabytes now on a laptop. That's a lot. If you really want all of that, you're going to be spending closer to $7,000. Wow. The 4 terabyte drive itself is $3,200, though. So, you know, but pros want that. They want to get the whole movie, the whole film on the hard drive internally. They don't want to carry around extra drives. This is exactly what pros wanted from Apple. Did they upgrade the keyboard a little bit? It looks like the keyboard is slightly quieter, although I've heard recordings. It doesn't sound quieter to me. And more to the point, they've added a silicone barrier to keep crumbs out. That was a big problem for the older MacBook Pro keyboards. So it is an improved MacBook Pro. And it is exactly, and this is important, it's exactly what the pros wanted from Apple. And here's my prediction. And again, I don't understand Apple's strategy. I can't really reasonably predict it. But here's my prediction. Apple wants consumers, normal people, people who would buy a MacBook or MacBook Air, to use iPads. That's the computer they want you to use. Professionals say, we can't use iPads. We need more. They're going to be spending a lot of money for iMac Pros, MacBook Pros, and next year the Mac Pro. And that's where the Macintosh line is headed, towards the Pro, high-end, very expensive. See, professionals don't care. If you're using this for work, big deal. You know, boss is paying for it, or you could justify the cost because you're making money with it. So you can spend that kind of money, and you want that kind of speed and power because time is money. And the rest of us, Apple, I believe, Apple's going to say, use an iPad. 8888-ASK-LEO. Disagree? Call me. Let's talk high tech. 8888-ASK-LEO, my phone number. That's the number to call. Let's talk high tech. You're going to get a Surface Go? Oh, yeah, I ordered a MacBook Pro, too. It was an expensive week. That's the downside of toy week. Reviews to come. Hey, I'm walking on sunshine. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888. Ask Leo. I want to be clear. They're not discontinuing. I think somebody in the chat room thought maybe I said they were discontinuing. Apple was discontinuing the MacBook or the MacBook Air or the less expensive MacBook Pros. They're not. They just didn't upgrade them. And I don't. Here's what I'm thinking. And my wife loves her MacBook. That's the thinnest, lightest MacBook. It's like an iPad, but it's a MacBook. My thinking is, I bet you they don't upgrade those. Well, maybe they will. It's still there's a market for it. But I think ultimately, it may not happen this year or the next or the year after, but ultimately Apple will kind of stop making the low-end Macintoshes. They'll make high-end, fast, super high-end, super premium machines for the professional market and then improve the iPad over time to get it closer to a real computer. Remember those iPad ads that they showed a few months ago? Where the young girl is playing with her iPad, doing all sorts of stuff, computery stuff. And then what her dad says, hey, honey, put away the computer. And she says, what's a computer? That tells you something about what Apple thinks the future is. They think, you know, people growing up today, they're not going to use it. They want a touch screen tablet. And frankly, I think their belief is shared by others like Microsoft. Look what Microsoft's making. Essentially tablets. So I just thought I'd mention that. Did you get up early for the big World Cup action, Kim Schaffer? Did you
go? No, I have had enough of that in my life over the last month. I can do without.
Yeah. So England's done now.
England's done, and they got fourth place,
which is nice.
Make my employer very happy.
Yeah, we should mention during the week.
During
Kim moonlights
in
an English pub. And so they didn't make you get up for that game, huh?
No. Well, I specifically tell them I'm unavailable on the weekends. I have other things
Can't do
to
it.
Do.
Yes. Can't do it. Well, the finals are tomorrow. France versus Croatia.
I'm going to go Croatia just because they're small and the underdog.
I don't know. Beautiful country,
yeah,
too.
I hear.
Yeah.
Never been, but.
I guess that was, you know, it's all confusing to me. But I gather that was formerly part of Yugoslavia, right? The fake country that was cobbled together after World War II called Yugoslavia. I think.
Okay, I'll go with
I don't
that.
Know. But it's
I don't,
a,
I don't
it's,
know either.
It's a traditionally, you know, Croatian.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've been to the coast there, and it's just gorgeous.
I've seen pictures.
Yeah. Yeah, Dubrovnik and Split. Anyway, I don't know why we got on this geography lesson. Hello.
I was just laughing at what you said about what's a computer because I was kvetching last night about a change made on Facebook. And somebody goes, oh, what's a computer? Because it's only on the computer and not on the mobile device.
And we're already seeing that Facebook usage on mobile far outpaces Facebook usage on desktop.
So I was actually on my laptop, and they've added a new button that's driving me crazy. they've put it in the place where the home button is, and it's called Create, and I keep hitting Create instead of Home.
Oh.
Anyway.
Yeah, that's why I, you know, one of many reasons I'm happy not to be using Facebook.
They just change it all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, you were talking about new tech, so Dr. Now Grandma wanted to talk about the new Amazon Show Mode charging dock. Do you know anything about that?
Whatever.
Whatever.
Do you know about that?
No.
No? Oh, okay. Well, but she'll
Lillian
tell you about
does.
It.
Yeah. From Long Island, Lil. Hello. Thank you, Kim.
Hey, Leo.
Hey. So actually, there is something I do know about, which is the Wyzecam pan that I use. Those cheap $30 and $20 Wyzecams now work with my Echo Show, which is kind of cool. But what else is new with the Amazon Echo?
Okay, they've just released what they're now calling the Alexa device.
Don't use the word Alexa if you do me. They call it the A word, but we'll call it Echo. I don't want to set off anybody's thing.
They have a whole series of now accessories they're calling the A word or the Echo accessories. And the initial one was the button, which is only used for games. And now they have the show mode charging dock.
Yeah. Did you ever get the button, which I thought was dopey?
Nope. Now, if I could use the button to do a one-trigger event,
right.
I might. But yeah. To me, to play games with it, I saw no reason. Yeah. And I really don't see a reason for this device either.
What does it do?
It's a charging dock for a Fire 8 or 10 high def, and only last year's model. Doesn't work on previous models. You put a slip case onto the Fire tablet. It only covers the back, doesn't protect the screen. And then it puts two pogo pins on the back. And when you drop it into the charging dock, all of a sudden the device turns into an Echo Show.
Oh, so you can I could see the use for that. I have an old Fire tablet. They're not great tablets. They were cheap, right? And I have this Echo. So basically it charges. So does it have, it doesn't seem to have pogo pins. So you'll have to have something that goes to a cable.
Right. What happens
cable.
Is part of the dock is, a case that only clips on the back, has a little adapter on the side, which is the micro USB plugs in,
yeah.
And the case has the pogo pins.
And then the case also includes the key elements, which is the Amazon Echo, microphone.
No. That's the point. All it is a charging dock with two pogo pins. No speakers, nothing else. They pushed software updates to the Fire tablet.
Oh, so the tablet's doing all the work, huh?
The tablet's hauling all the work. If you go down to settings on the newer ones, you'll see there's an option to put it into show mode. So it looks like an Echo Show.
Okay.
Here's your
so
problem.
If I don't care about the charging dock, can I still use my Fire tablet as an Echo Show?
At least right now the 2017s will. They're supposed to be rolling it farther back.
That's kind of cool. So the charging dock is just so you can have it always on.
Right. But to me, I mean, I got the charging dock, got it the day, tried it. The speakers are still the tinny Fire speakers, yeah. So you're not getting the speaker quality of the show.
Although, if you wanted to buy more stuff, you could hook up some speakers, too, I guess.
True. I guess some people who have the Fire tablet, when it's plugged in at home, they've got Bluetooth speakers hooked up to it.
Have speakers. And then, go ahead.
I found the pogo pin charging takes about twice as long.
Yeah, that's too bad.
Plugging it in directly.
Yeah.
I mean, I let the thing run down, my Fire tablet run down to almost dead.
I'm guessing the point is to keep it always charged, that you leave it on there always, it would be my guess.
Yeah.
Well, Dr. Mom, thank you for the update on a product. Sounds like you're giving it two thumbs down. Scott Wilkinson, Home Theater Guru, coming up. Well, that's too bad. It sounds like it's a... But you know what? So far, all of these accessories have been dopey.
Yeah. I mean, to me, I was hoping that it would up the speakers. It doesn't. You're stuck with those same tinny speakers. So I'm not going to watch a movie. The only thing you get is, if you got the Fire tablets, you can watch YouTube and stuff on it, which you can't do with the show.
But the screens are so bad on the Fire that I don't... Yeah.
Yeah. The screens are not great. You're stuck with the same... There's only one angle to view it at. You can't really adjust that back flap.
Right.
I mean, it's not expensive. If you had a Fire tablet, maybe. But to me, the biggest thing, I started watching a movie on it to see how it did. The battery bleeds faster than the dock can charge it.
Well, that's not good. Actually,
no,
that's
isn't.
A big problem. That's a huge problem. So it's $35. That's not bad.
Right. It's not bad. And then I tried to the little white thing on the side. That's where the micro USB plug goes in. That's part of the case.
Yeah.
I tried pulling that out and just plugging it right in.
Yeah.
And then it doesn't automatically drop into show mode. So it's got to get the power through the pogo plug.
Well, so it's cheaper than a show, and I guess if you already had the tablet, if you wanted the usefulness of the show,
you
could do this. I'm more interested in, and I think this is going to end up being the big one, is the Lenovo device that uses the Google Home. But it's not cheap, but they have a 10-inch, let me see if I can find this, a 10-inch, it's kind of like an Echo Show, the smart, they call it the Lenovo Smart Display. And this, I think, is going to be very interesting and much the same, except that it'll be Google instead of Amazon.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think that's, and I bet you it's going to be a good screen and all that stuff. So,
and I don't know if you look, right now the Echo Show is on a pre-Prime Day sale.
Oh,
and it's
yeah.
$120.
I forgot. I should have mentioned Prime Day. Yeah, that's tomorrow. Tomorrow afternoon.
That price, I wouldn't
Sunday,
buy a
Monday
tablet
after.
In this dock thinking you've got a show and a tablet at the same time. It's just not worth it.
No, get a show.
Exactly.
All right, Dr. Mom. Nice to talk. Dr. Grandma. Yeah,
I'm about to go use the Echo Show to FaceTime with my grandson.
Yeah, see, that's a great use for it. I do that with my mom. She loves it because I can sit in the kitchen and she watches me cook. We talk while I'm cooking. That's really cute. That's really fun.
Okay.
All right. Thanks,
Lil.
See ya.
Okay, bye.
Hey, Scott.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
Mike Heiss says he saw the Lenovo at CES, but it's not totally great. So there you go.
There you go.
Bump-de-bump. Hump-de-hump. That must mean I hear that song and I think every time, gosh, I just have a hankering. A desire to talk home theater with Scott Wilkinson. And he appears.
Boom.
Boom. Editor at the AVS Forum, where he is the king of AV. He joins us every week to talk home theater. The number one, I would say, without a doubt, you know, we talk a lot about TVs.
Yeah.
But when it comes to home theater sound, without a doubt, the number one topic is soundbars.
Yeah.
Why is that?
Well, because they're so much easier than a full speaker array, and they sound so much better than the sound coming from the TV itself.
Yeah.
You know, TV makers spend so much time on the picture quality, and they might spend some time on the sound, the speakers and the sound coming from the TV itself, but TVs these days are so thin that it's physically not possible to get enough volume in near the speaker to make a good sound.
Yeah.
It's just not possible. You kinda change the laws of physics.
You can't. No, you can't.
So the alternative, one way to do it, of course, is to get an AVR, AV receiver, and a bunch of speakers all around. And that's really the best way because you get a true surround sound, maybe even Atmos with overhead speakers and so on. But if you don't want to go through all that, then the other way to go is with a sound bar, which is basically a set of speaker drivers in one low, thin case that you sit in front of the TV, and it provides far better sound than the speakers within the TV itself. Now, the one problem is that some people have a little confusion about how it works. For example, Stanford Brown wrote me some time ago and said, I have a Pioneer soundbar designed by Andrew Jones. Great soundbar.
You love that one. Yeah.
I love that one. Absolutely. You know, he said, but I can't figure out how to connect my AVR to it, my AV receiver. Well, that's a problem because an AV receiver has two basic functions. One is to switch between different source devices, and the other is to power speakers. And you might think, okay, well, good. The soundbar is speakers. The AVR can power them. No, because soundbars, most soundbars, already have amplifiers built into them. They are really designed to be connected directly to the TV. They are designed so that you don't need a receiver. I mean, that's the point. If you want a receiver, put a bunch of speakers in your room.
Right.
But if you don't want a receiver and you don't want a bunch of speakers in your room, you want to connect the soundbar directly to the TV. And typically the way you do that is with the optical digital audio output from a TV. Virtually all TVs have this. Whatever sound they would be sending to their speakers can be rerouted to this little what's called a Toslink connector. You've seen them, I'm sure.
Yeah, that's optical. Yeah.
It's optical. It's a fiber optic cable that sends digital audio by a series of laser pulses out to whatever you're connecting it to. And what you do is you connect it to the soundbar. And the soundbar
then gets every bit of the audio, not just center channel, left, right. It gets everything.
Well, depending on the TV. Here's sort of a little dirty secret in the world of TVs. Many TVs will, if they have a 5.1 surround signal, say, or something like that, very often they will down mix that. They will combine those 5.1 channels into two channels before they send it out. Oh. There's no way around that in many cases. So,
and yet some soundbars have decoding in that would handle all of that extra data, but they don't send it to them.
Some TVs don't. It's by on a TV by TV or company by company basis that you may or may not get full surround
that's
sound.
To investigate before you use a surround sound soundbar.
Correct.
Right?
Correct. Yes, absolutely.
Because you might just not get that information. You might just get stereo.
You might just get stereo, which, you know, in that case, if your TV is only sending out stereo, don't buy a sound bar that gives you surround sound.
Right.
Now, the one caveat to that is some sound bars may very well get in a stereo signal, two-channel signal, and expand that throughout the surround field. So that seems to me to be kind of weird, because if you had a surround signal originally, it gets down mixed to two, sent to the sound bar, and then re-expanded.
Yeah, that's dumb.
It's dumb.
So what TVs, modern, current TVs do
that?
Are there specific brands to stay away from?
You know, I can't think of them off the top of my head.
But check
the
specs before you buy, that's for sure.
Exactly. And the problem is many of the specs won't tell you that. They aren't included in the spec. So you know what? You've given me a great idea. I'm going to write an article. I'm going to do some research and find out which TVs do it and which don't.
That would be great. Now, what if you use the HDMI port instead of the Toslink port? Is it the same problem?
Not necessarily.
And
no.
Do some soundbars take HDMI? I didn't even.
Yes.
They do.
Yes, okay. Some do. Some take HDMI in. Some, in fact, have multiples. We talked last week with a guy. I was talking with one of your callers, and we recommended the Sony HT5000.
Very nice soundbar.
Very nice soundbar. Yeah. Really top of the line. And it has like three HDMI inputs and an HDMI output. So you can connect your source devices like your Roku or your Blu-ray player or whatever directly to the soundbar. And then the audio from those sources goes to your TV via the HDMI output.
Yeah.
The good news about that is that most TVs now have also smart features, right? They have their own built-in apps. So say you don't have a Roku and you're using your TV for the smart TV functions, the Netflix and Amazon and YouTube and so on. There's a very interesting feature of HDMI called ARC, Audio Return Channel. And what that does is, say you have the output, the HDMI output from the receiver, from the soundbar, connected to the TV's HDMI input.
Mm.
What it can do is send the audio from within the TV, so its internal apps, also maybe its internal over-the-air tuner, can send that audio back along the same cable that is sort of going against the grain, if you will, in the opposite direction, back into the soundbar. So it coordinates or integrates, I should say, the sound coming from a source like a Blu-ray player, or if you're watching the internal apps or tuner of the TV, that'll come back along the same cable that otherwise sent audio to the TV. I know this is a little confusing, but it really does make things a lot simpler to connect and to use. This is a really nice feature of HDMI called ARC.
You got to write this up now. Please do this
Exactly right. Yeah. You're exactly right. Particularly a survey of which TVs downshift to two-channel through their...
I had no idea.
Yeah.
Now, real quickly, we only have a minute, but... there's a bit of a scandal brewing with LG OLEDs and burn-in, and I don't know if you saw this.
I did.
Yeah, this was a third party at SID Display Week. Not LG, but there was burn-in on their OLED, and we've seen other times. I guess the short question I have for you is, should we be concerned about burn-in on OLEDs?
Not in normal usage. Remember, this was at a trade show.
Yeah, I've had mine for 3 years with no problem.
No problem. Okay. At a trade show, you're showing the same thing for the entire day, for days on end. Yes, that could be a problem.
Okay.
But in normal usage, not a problem. I think that's a fake story.
Fake news. Finally, in home theater.
Yep.
If you want real news, go to AVS Forum. Scott Wilkinson, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls right after this. Fake news.
I know. I was amazed when I saw that. I went, well, wait a second. Those of us who buy TVs to use in our
aren't
rooms
gonna show
are
the
not
same thing
for three days in a row,
yeah.
Constantly, all yeah. day long for 3 days in a row. They're not going to do it. So
it's just an unusual usage.
It's precisely. It's an unusual use case that no consumer is going to do.
And if it does get burned in, can you fix it or is it permanent?
It depends. In that case, it might have become permanent. There's two terms. There's image retention, which is temporary, and there's burn-in, which is permanent.
Right.
So that might have been burn-in, but in the case of most TVs, I would think it's image retention and therefore temporary. I must admit I haven't looked for image retention countermeasures. Remember plasma TVs?
I thought they were doing them, like slightly adjusting the screen.
Well, yes, there is something called pixel shifting,
right?
Which basically takes the image and shifts it around every once in a while by a single pixel,
right?
I can't imagine that would really be that effective.
Okay.
Plasma TVs used to have other more aggressive methods of combating image retention, like swiping a bar across the screen or doing a bunch of noise.
Right.
You can also buy a disc that does that.
Okay.
You know, that basically has noise and exercises all the pixels equally. Some plasma TVs used to have that. I don't know if OLEDs do typically or not. That's another thing to look into. But for now, the main thing for me is you've given me a great idea to look at, to really do the research, because that isn't often obvious in the specs.
It may be I would love to see that. And speaking of OLED burn-in, it may be an issue when OLEDs are used in other environments, like for phones. We saw some burn-ins on the Pixel 2s.
Oh,
and
really?
I have an OLED screen on my Lenovo Yoga. It was very expensive. It's not had burn-in, but I noticed they've stopped making Yogas or any Lenovo laptops with OLED. So I'm wondering.
With OLED?
Yeah, I'm wondering if they're. Because those computer screens are static, and often for a long period of time. Although, this would be a case to bring back the screensaver, right?
Right, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. KLU2 in the chat room. Pixel shifting will only give the burn-in fuzzy edges. Yeah, I think that's true,
right.
too.
Doesn't move it enough.
Doesn't move it enough.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. So, anyway, yeah, there you go.
You can stick around for the top.
Yep, happy
all right,
to.
I'll give you 83 seconds. All here yours.
We go. Let's see. Oh, Mike Heiss. Hey, Mike. Check me on this, but lower price sets, ARC also only has two channel. It's not the ARC or TOS that determines what goes downstream. It's the design of the set. That's true. That's absolutely correct. It's the design of the set. And it may very well be that ARC is only two channel as well. Like I said, this is a great research paper for me, so I'm gonna jump into that because I think that's really good. Because otherwise, who's gonna know? How do you know? You don't. Mike Heiss, it's a cost thing relative to royalty and a few other things. Mike, I'm gonna call you, and you can help me get started on this research project because I think it's worth doing. Let's see, who else has a question here? Oh, here's something. Twisted Mister was talking about JRiver on Windows versus I forget what the software was on the Mac. He was going from – this is audio software, audio playback software. And He said that they sounded significantly different, and I was kind of surprised at that. But since we only have a few seconds, we'll have to come back at the top of the hour.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Woo! 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. Line 2, Lynn, Covina, California. Hi, Lynn. Hello, Lynn. In Covina. Singing usually wakes him up. Lynn may have her phone on mute. That seems to be a common one this time, these days. Nothing? All right. I'll tell you what I'm going to do, Lynn. I'm going to put you on hold and go to line 3, Shane in Yelm, Washington. Hi, Shane.
Hey, Leo.
Welcome.
So I'm a professional photographer, and
nice.
I edit in my editing bay, and it's a separate room. And then when I'm done and have clients come in to look at prints and stuff, we have a 65-inch Vizio TV that it's a 4K, and it's in the front room, and there's window light and everything else. So that's part of the question. But I hook up my laptop to the TV to show them. And I calibrate my monitors in my editing room with an X-Rite calibrator. And if I took it in the front room, I was thinking about calibrating it, but then I unplug it and have slideshows going on when it's not being used as a showing their print, but just showing our work just as a when you walk into the entryway. I was wondering what you thought I should do because I'm kind of confused.
So just to explain for everybody else, you know, key elements for photographers is that the screen reflect the photo accurately, right? That red is red and blue is blue, and of course every shade thereof. And so there are screens that are more accurate, computer screens that are more accurate, some less accurate, but photographers who really are careful, as obviously you are, Shane, will use hardware calibrators and software. The calibrator measures the screen, sends signals to the screen, then measures it, and then you can create a profile on a computer that will modify the way the screen displays colors to make it more accurate. This becomes a real issue when you're printing because screens and printers make color in opposite ways. One's transmissive, one's reflective. And so it's actually very difficult to match. But again, this is something photographers really want. When you're photo editing on a computer, you want to make sure that what you're going to get is going to be accurate. It sounds to me that you care enough that even when you show to your clients, you show that you want that wedding dress to be white, not blue or gray. You want the sunsets to have their correct colors and all of that stuff. And I admire you for that. Do you find that the TV is really far off?
I don't think it's way off, but I do notice that sometimes people are it's a little less, poppy or
right.
Than I have a Retina display, and I'm looking at it while I'm sitting at my little.
So it's interesting
table.
That you bring this up because Apple has released these new MacBook Pros, and they're using something they put on the iPad Pro a while ago called True Tone. They have an ambient light sensor in the computer that reads the room light and then because remember the room light is also going to affect it. You know, if you're in a yellow room, that's going to change the way you perceive, not the way the color actually is, but the way you perceive the color. So this True Tone modifies the displays. You can turn it off, and you probably would want to. But that's why a lot of times people really care about this stuff. Color graders and so forth will work in a 30% gray room. I have a friend who paints everything 20% gray because he doesn't want it to influence the colors on the screen. That's going a little far, if you ask me. But and so what's interesting is these new MacBook Pros have True Tone, and when you apparently that we in the spec when you connect an external monitor to it, it does the True Tone for the monitor, which is very interesting. But the problem really is when you got a TV or any external monitor, it's calibrated separately, and a TV in particular is not going to be calibrated the same. You know, Scott Wilkinson's still on the line here, and I might pull him in on this because he actually is a trained television calibrator, right, Scott?
Absolutely.
Would it help for Shane to do that to his TV?
Sure, absolutely. I mean, if he's showing clients their photos, this is the same thing as happens in a color grading suite. The color scientist or the colorist has a little monitor that they work on, and they have a bigger monitor that they show the director. They show their work off to the director and the director of photography, and they have to be calibrated to look the same.
Yeah, the DP is going to notice the difference for sure.
Exactly. Now, you know, your customers for your wedding shots or whatever kind of professional photography you're doing might not have such golden eyes.
It sounds like Shane's do.
Maybe so, in which case I definitely would calibrate the TV to match what you're looking at as close as possible on your computer monitor.
Now, you can't use his existing PC calibrator probably on the TV, or can he?
You could. I don't see why not.
Okay.
He said it was an X-Rite.
It's an X-Rite Pro. It's the more expensive one. I can't remember what it's called.
Is it the i1 Display i1. Pro?
Yes, that's it.
Yeah, it's a great calibration monitor and a meter, and not that expensive. I think it's on the order of – it's under $300, and it's what's called a spectroradiometer. So you actually can calibrate any display with it. And I would definitely use it to calibrate the Vizio. You said it was a Vizio you have as a client monitor, so to speak?
Yeah, it's a 65-inch Vizio 2016.
Does Vizio have all those – I've seen you do this with my TV, Scott. You go deeper into the settings and there's
– Oh, sure. You know, yeah, absolutely.
Gamma and other, you know.
Yeah.
This is the one thing that I'm bothered by is that if I calibrated off my monitor – my laptop, what would happen if I unplug it and I just have it going as a slideshow? Would the monitor stay with those settings or does
absolutely.
That unplug?
Absolutely. Yes.
Generally in the menu, you'll have custom settings and then presets like dynamic, motion picture, stuff like that.
Right.
And you can switch among those, but the custom will stay there.
Correct. Now, if you switch between inputs, so you calibrate HDMI input number one, say, for when your computer's connected, and then you've got a slideshow coming into input number two, it won't necessarily have the same calibration.
Oh.
It depends on the TV itself.
So it's per input.
It's per input. Yeah. Now, many TVs have a copy to all inputs function. So once you've got it set for one input, you can copy it to other inputs and it'll be the same. In other cases, if you calibrate the custom mode, for example, and then you go to input number two and select custom mode, it may very well bring those calibration settings along. I'd have to look at the specific TV to know whether that was true in your particular case. But one way or the other, you can certainly get the calibration settings from one input to another, no problem.
So how would I find that out? Like, that's the reason I'm calling you guys is because I Googled the heck out of this thing.
We're better than Google. You hear that, Scott?
What do you know?
What do you know?
Can I go to ABS Forum? Is there something if I typed in my model TV, could I find out if it has separate HDMI?
Just say that in your TV manual. And, you know, experimentation will also tell you.
That's true. If you want to send me an email, scott@twit.tv, I'll be glad to take a look.
Nice. Thank you, Scott.
Sure. That would be great. Thank you so much, guys.
Yeah. I'm glad you care about your customers that much. It's nice. And it's good that Scott sticks around after his segment because it always seems to be something for you. Thank you, Scott. I appreciate it. Scott Wilkinson, avsforum.com. A lot of computer monitors these days come pre-calibrated. And the really good ones, like the Apple monitors, they will individually calibrate at the factory before they send them out. And that's why photographers pay a lot more for high-end monitors because they you know. But ultimately, there's no substitute for calibrating them yourself. And a lot of pros end up doing that. We're going to take a little break. News at the top of the hour. More calls to come right after this. All right, Scotty.
So Atachi is asking, how do you calibrate a TV? Well, there are several levels you can use. The first level, specifically calibration, is the last level. So the first thing you want to do is go into the TV's menu, the picture menu, and find the parameter called picture mode. and select the mode that's labeled movie or cinema. That's going to be the closest to accurate out of the box. And by accurate, I mean there are a set of standards that define accuracy in a TV. And by accuracy, we mean the TV displays as close as possible what the content creators saw when they were creating the content. They're following those standards, and the TV should follow those standards as well in order for you to see what they intended you to see. It's their creative content, their artistic vision. They want you to see it as they intended. So selecting the movie or cinema mode of within a TV is the first step. Second step, if you want to get a little deeper, is you go buy a test disc or a calibration disc. For example, if you're not deeply into this, the one I recommend is from Disney, of all places, called Disney World of Wonder, or WOW. And that is a step-by-step process. It takes you through the process. I think Goofy takes you through the process. Anyway, or you can get one called Digital Video Essentials HD Basics from Joe Kane, or HD Benchmark from Spears and Munsell. All of these discs are in the $20 to $30 range. And what they do is they let you set the basic picture controls. And there are five basic picture controls in virtually all TVs. Sometimes they're known by different names, but for the most part, they're called brightness, contrast, color, color saturation, or hue, and hue, that's the fourth one, and then sharpness. So those are the five. And in movie mode, those are set relatively close to, or closer than any of the other modes, to what they should be. But if you want to get them closer still, you buy Disney WOW or HD Basics or HD Benchmark. Those are Blu-rays. Disney WOW is available in a Blu-ray or a DVD. And you play those discs and you set those five controls. And when you set those five controls, I typically think you get on the order of 70 to 80% of the way towards the absolute best the TV can do. The final step is actually technically called calibration. And that is a much more involved process where you need a meter. We were talking to that guy, that photographer, about his meter called a spectroradiometer. You can also use what's called a colorimeter with some caveats I won't get into right now. But anyway, you need a meter, some sort of instrument that measures the color coming off the TV, and you need some software. And the software I use is called CalMan from a company called SpectraCal, which is now owned by Portrait Displays. So if you have the software on a computer, you have the meter. The third thing you need is training. You need to know how to use this stuff, and it's not trivial. I got my training from THX. ISF, Imaging Science Foundation, also offers training. And you go through a course, and you take a test, and you get your certificate. And once you have that training and the equipment and the software, you can perform this calibration. Or you can pay someone to do it. You can hire a professional calibrator. And that will typically cost you several hundred dollars. So the question is, do you want to spend several hundred dollars? Or if you buy this stuff, several hundred more dollars probably, and could be many thousands, plus the cost of the courses or studying and getting the training, to get that last 20% of performance out of the TV. If it's an inexpensive TV, I say it's not worth it. Don't do it. Go get a Disney WOW or a HD Basics or an HD Benchmark. Set those five basic user controls, brightness, contrast, color, hue, sharpness, and you're 80% of the way there and you're done. And it only costs you $20 or $30. If you buy a very expensive TV or a projector, say, an expensive OLED or a really big TV or a really expensive projector, then yes, it's worth spending the extra few hundred bucks to actually do the calibration. I'm not going to describe exactly how to do that calibration because it's very involved. And like I said, it requires some training to understand how to do it. Let's see. I am Special UK says, those modes are too yellow to me. Sorry. This is a very important thing, actually, because when you go to the store and you look at TVs on the wall, they look very bright and technically very blue. You bring them home. If you put them in movie mode, they don't look yellow to me, but they do look kind of reddish. And that's just by means of comparison. You're used to seeing something that's too blue, and you're used to thinking, oh, that's correct. And then you take it home and you put it in movie mode and you go, oh, that looks kind of reddish. Or in I Am Special UK's case, a little yellowish. And you go, that doesn't look right. My advice is to live with it for a while because it is closer to accurate. Remember what I said about accurate. Accurate is, does it convey the content creator's intent accurately? And I'm telling you, movie mode does, more so than vivid mode or game mode or even standard mode typically. Believe it or not, the one that there's another parameter called color temperature. And typically movie mode, in movie picture mode, the color temperature will be set to warm. And that does have a kind of a reddish appearance to it at first. But when you measure it, it's actually neutral white, and that's what you want. Because if you measure game mode or vivid mode, it's going to be very blue, and that's not what the content creator intended. So that's what I'm saying.
Always do what the creator intended.
That's my intent. That's my advice. Absolutely.
Thanks, Scott. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Oh, yeah, time to talk computers and the internet and home theater, digital photography. We talk about smartphones. We talk about smartwatches, iPads, tablets, the new Surface Go. Just ordered that. 8888-ASK-LEO, the phone number, 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. You can also reach us from outside those countries, if you use Skype, Skype out, call 888-827-5536. The website for the show is techguylabs.com. I tell you that because everything we talk about is there, links and all that stuff, so you don't have to write it down. And it's free. I don't, you know, they put up this, there's these things called paywalls. You've heard this phrase, paywalls. There's websites that charge you money for the content, the access to it. And there's some people can do this and it succeeds, you know, very, very famously, the Wall Street Journal. You know, you go to the Wall Street Journal and you'll see the article fades out after about a paragraph and it says, if you want to read more, pay us. And I guess, you know, it makes sense with something like the Wall Street Journal because people make money, right? That it helps them make money. At least they think it does. And so they're willing to pay not an inexpensive amount of money for it. That's called a paywall. I don't do a paywall on my website for several reasons. One, I want you to have the information. You listen to the show. You do me the favor of listening to the show. I'd like to make sure you get everything you want. So you can just go to techguylabs.com and just enter freely. Two, I don't think anybody would pay for it anyway. So that's the negative side of paywalls. And it's not unusual for a company to put up a paywall and realize, oh, nobody wants to pay for our stuff. I don't want to find out. So that's reason two. Reason three, I don't have to, thanks to our fine sponsors. We have great sponsors on the show. So they pay for it all, so you don't have to. That seems if I am personally, and of course I grew up doing this, a big fan of ad-supported free media. Not against it. No. And you're not either, obviously. You're listening to this on the radio. And you know, you pay for the content with your attention, in effect, listening to the ads in between. And broadcast TV's done that for years. Unfortunately, broadcast TV kind of is double dipping a little bit because nobody watches over antennas anymore, which really is free. You usually watch over cable. And when you watch over cable, some part of your cable subscription fee goes to the channel. So they're getting money from you as a subscription as well as money from advertisers. And now that they're dependent on that, they're not going to go back. You never go back. You can never make less money. No business is ever going to willingly do that. So we're seeing, you know, we pay for more and more stuff. I don't know. I think one of the reasons people are now maybe more willing to do that is unfortunate. Is this thing that people sometimes call surveillance capitalism. That is a pretty loaded term. But you can thank, you know, technology for having changed this. In order to make money on advertising on radio and TV, the networks that are selling the advertising will charge the advertiser by the number of eyeballs or ear lobes that they get, right? They count. That's why there's ratings. That's the point of ratings. It's, you know, it's fun for the broadcasters to compare ratings, but what it's really for is, well, 1 million people watch this show. We charge you $1 per 1,000. So that means you're going to pay $1,000 for that ad, $1 per 1,000 viewers. Divided by, you know, 1 million divided by that is 1,000. Usually it's more than $1, I should say. But that's why you end up for the Super Bowl paying a lot of money for a Super Bowl ad because hundreds of millions are watching it. And it's a premium product, so they charge a premium price. Problem with that is measurement. And the ways radio and TV are measured have changed over time. Now they're more technological. You know, they have things called people meters. Nielsen came up with this. You know, if you're watching TV, they don't sample everybody. They sample a small number of people and then project the total number of viewers. So 1,000, let's say 1,000 Nielsen families get a little box. They put it on their TV and it monitors what they watch. Well, that is really old school because when we get to the internet, they don't need a people meter. They don't need anything. Every time you view a web page or watch a Netflix stream, not only do they know how long you watch it for, when you turn it off, when you turn it back on. The metrics for digital content are everything an advertiser's dream of and more. Advertisers love it. Oh, we know exactly. And, you know, truthfully, the people selling the ads like it too because we don't have to guess how many people watched. We know. I do podcasts, and that's exactly how we sell advertising on podcasts, by the number of viewers and a certain cost per 1,000 viewers or listeners in the case of a podcast. And that works pretty well because you can tell how many people downloaded a show. You get pretty accurate numbers. But advertisers weren't satisfied with that. And this is where things started to go south. Then they wanted to know more about it and be able to buy specific demographics. So now I want to know, well, how many 12-year-olds watch? How many 20-year-olds watch? How many 50-year-olds watch? And, oh, by the way, I only want to buy 18 to 24-year-olds. How much is that going to cost? And this is where TV and radio start to say, well, we can give you a little bit, but we don't know that much. Where digital knows everything, right? Especially, yes, our favorites, Facebook and Google. And that's why more than half of all I think it's now 80% of all digital advertising revenue goes to two companies, Facebook and Google. Because they can sell an ad. Facebook, we know, can sell an ad to somebody who's depressed at the moment, lives in Northern California, and is over 45 years old. Yes, they can sell by emotional, tenor. Because they claim to know, based on what you're doing, what you like, what you're reading, how you're feeling. And they, believe me, they sell it by that. They can sell to singles, to marriage, to divorces. They know everything. Facebook is going to eventually probably eat up all advertising in the world because they know so much about you. And this is where there's starting to be pushback, isn't there? Because now we're going, well, wait a minute. I don't want you to know that much about me. Facebook says, yeah, but the advertisers really love this stuff, and we make a lot of money because the advertiser's getting a very efficient ad buy. And now the blame comes on advertisers, and unfortunately it starts to affect what I think is a completely benign use of this, ad-supported free media like this show. I think this is great because anybody can listen. It's completely democratic. You know, there's no cost to you except in your attention during the ads. And it means that you don't have to have money to buy. You don't have to get through a paywall. You can, I think it's a great way to, you know, support a product. Unfortunately, now I think there's a lot of pushback. People are using ad blockers. Do you use an ad blocker? A lot of people are using ad blockers. They're starting to be built in. Microsoft's Edge. See, Microsoft used to want to sell ads this way. They kind of gave up on it. So now they make a browser Edge for mobile that blocks ads. Part of the reason for that, too, is that ads often carry malware and sometimes really just bog your system down, especially a mobile device, because there's so much stuff in the ad. So, unfortunately, by pushing so hard, I think advertisers have hurt themselves and they've inadvertently hurt what I think is a great way of distributing media. You don't want to pay for all the media you get, do you? You'd like to get some free media. I hope so. I like doing free media. I like the democratic aspect of it. Anyway, 8888 Ask Leo. Just a thought about, you know, this problem that we're going to get into because of digital. Digital's really created this issue of snooping on us to make us more valuable. And then, and by the way, there's a side effect that in collecting all this information about us, for purposes of advertising, admittedly, they now create dossiers. Facebook has a dossier on everybody who uses Facebook that they are apparently sometimes willing to give people for other reasons, including governments. Now there's a problem. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. Let's talk high tech right after this. Our show today is brought to you by WordPress.com. Oh, man. This is a solution for anybody who wants to get on the web and control their own destiny, their own site, make it reflect their voice, their style, their content. You can have a Facebook page. You can have a Twitter feed. But if you're a business, you darn well better have your own website. And I would submit, if you're an individual, same thing is true. When people search for your name, you want to have your site come up with your stuff, the best stuff about you. Start now. Do it now. Otherwise, somebody posts something under your name or about you, that becomes the number one search result on Google. Mm-mm, you don't want that. You want to have it be your site. And who knows? If you're a business, Facebook says they don't like the cut of your jib, boom, you're gone. That puts you out of business. You got to have your own website. Now, I know why you probably don't. Oh, it's complicated. It's expensive. No, that's why I tell you about WordPress.com. It's what I use. At LeoLaporte.com. It's what my friends use. Steve Gibson uses. Everybody I know uses WordPress.com, including some of the biggest publications in the world. Remember when Quartz.com came out? Everybody said, oh, Quartz is like state-of-the-art web. This is amazing. It was WordPress all along. That's how good WordPress is. And it's why 31% of all the websites in the world run on WordPress. I'm going to say that again because it doesn't sound possible. 31% of every website you go to on the web is a WordPress site. Almost a third. It'll be a third soon because WordPress is great. You don't need to know coding. You don't need to know design. They give you everything you need to get your site up and running. Great themes, templates, all the stuff. You just pick it, say, this is how I want it to look. You are only responsible for your content. Although if you want to sell, they have a lot of great e-commerce options. Everything from a simple buy button, very effective, to a whole online store. You can do it all at WordPress.com. And by the way, plans start at $4 a month. There's no reason not to have a WordPress site. And as you get more, you know, fancy and your business expands, you might want to look at the business plans. That's what I use. You get built-in SEO. You get social sharing so your customers can share your story with their friends on their Facebook page and their Twitter feed. You get specialized plugins. I use the Google AMP plugin. They have the best anti-spam comment plugin in the world, Akismet. WordPress is awesome. No wonder 31% of all the websites in the world run on it. Get started today. 15% off any new plan purchase. But you have to go to WordPress.com/tech guy. WordPress.com/tech guy to create your brand new website. 15% off WordPress.com/tech guy. We thank WordPress for the support of the Tech Guy podcast that makes this show possible without a paywall. Thank you, WordPress. Thank you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. You don't interrupt anybody's womp, bop, a loo, wop, wham, bam, boom. Can't do that. Line two, let's try Lynn in Covina, California. Hi, Lynn.
Hi, can you hear me?
I hear you now. Sorry, I don't know what happened before, but...
I do know what happened. You were right. It was muted, only I don't know how to mute, so inadvertent.
It happened. You know, it's funny. I'm starting to recognize it happens a lot. And it's frustrating because you're talking, and I'm saying, hello, yeah. Hello, hello.
Yeah, yeah.
It's very frustrating.
No, you were right.
I'm glad you figured it out. Unmute.
You figured it out.
I'm the tech guy. It's my job. Okay. What can I do for you, Lynn?
So, baby boomer can't figure out mute. Also, I have a bunch of VHS cassettes, you know?
Oh, you have some of those still?
Yeah, well, that's the problem. I do have some still. That is the problem. I don't know exactly how to preserve them.
Are they commercial, you know, like movies, or are they ones you made?
Oh, ones I made.
Oh, good. Okay. Yeah, because the commercial ones, they have some copy protection on it. It's not, you can defeat it, but it's a separate process. All right, so.
Well, it's against the law, too, I think. But.
Well, technically. Law, schmaw. In my opinion, and I'm not a judge or a lawyer, but in my opinion, if you own a movie, you have the right to make a copy of it. You bought it. I wouldn't rent a movie and make a copy of it.
Yeah.
That would be wrong. You know, I know people that do that. That's not right. But if you bought the movie and it's on a VHS format and you'd like to still watch it, converting it seems like a good idea. They already got your money.
That's right. And also, then they're not going to be making them a lot longer, so...
I know. Do you still have a VCR?
Yes. Yes. Now, I'll tell you, I've looked online at stuff, and I'm not sure exactly what to get.
Well, you need a VCR to play it back, obviously. You need something that can handle the tape. And then the VCR, you could buy, but since you already have a VCR, you don't want to buy this. But you could buy, they make... And they won't make them much longer, but they made VCRs that had DVD burners built into them, so that you could
and
just.
I don't really want a DVD.
No, that's right. Like from one old technology to a less old technology, but both are obsolete. Right. Yeah.
From a younger dinosaur from an older dinosaur to a younger one.
So what you need—it's a little complicated. What you need to do. But it's worth doing.
I know I need a cassette adapter to make it.
I mean, honestly, if I were you, I would just go to a service like Scan Cafe that'll do this. You mail them the tapes, they send you back the digital stuff. But
they charge a lot.
Well, it's not cheap. But you're going to have to pay something to do this anyway because you're going to have to buy some hardware. So let me tell you what you need and then you decide.
Yeah.
So the VCR will have on the back of it some connectors for video output. That's the thing you connect to the TV. Most of the time, VCRs only have the red, white, and yellow cables.
Right.
Yeah, and that's pretty low quality, but then so's the VHS tape. So, if your VCR had a higher quality connector like component, that would be better to use, but it probably doesn't.
Yeah.
The yellow is video. That's composite video. And then the red and white are stereo audio left and right. Those three things are coming out. You need to connect that into something that will digitize it. You got to turn those analog audio and video into bits and bytes so the computer can record it. So you need a video digitizing device. And there's some that are internal.
Is that like that video capture device?
Yeah, video capture, exactly.
Okay.
And there are internal video capture devices and there are external, but are you doing it to a laptop?
Well, that's can I go straight to some sort of thumb drive? I'd have to go through a computer, wouldn't I?
You have to go through a computer because a computer has to take the signal and record it.
Yeah. So I have to download it onto a computer first.
Yeah, and there are a number of companies that make devices that connect to the U.S. Do you not have a computer?
No, I do.
Okay.
I do.
They connect to the USB port on your computer.
Uh-huh.
And you'll run some software that will then record it and save it in a format that you can then copy to the USB.
Is there decent free software, or do I have to buy that? Because I see
usually the hardware comes with some software. Yes, there's
okay.
decent free.
Okay.
So the simplest one would be Elgato, Elgato. Uh-huh. I see it on Amazon. Uh-huh. The Elgato video capture that goes exactly okay. as I said from those that red, white, and yellow cable right. into the USB. It's $82.
Okay. So that gives me the box and the software.
Yeah, usually they come with software that'll do this. The other company that makes these is very poorly named. It's pronounced Hop Hog.
Not poorly made.
It's well made. This is a very well known company, Hop Hog, okay. but the spelling, it's a city in Long Island. HAUPPAUGE. Why would you name a company that? Hop Hog.
Somehow, unless it's your last name and you want to brag.
But. It's a city. That's the city in Long Island that they're in.
Yeah.
$45.
Yeah.
That would be fine. So that is is $45. Connect up to your VCR. Connects to the computer. You run the software. And, yes, there's free software out there. Because all it's really doing is capturing the bits yeah. coming in off the USB port and saving them. It comes with the Hop Hog capture application. And what's nice, it will also let you cut off the beginning and the end because there'll be, you know, some junk at the beginning and the end of that kind of
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, yeah. And so the cable would be like, it's got the three-way on one side and then like the
USB on the other.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
They call it the USB Live 2. This is $45. That's probably the one I'd get.
Uh-huh. Okay. All right. Fortunately, I have a millennial around here who can do it.
That's what you need. You should have told me that. You don't need any more. All you need is a millennial.
No, actually, I need a millennial who wants to figure it out.
Yeah, actually, ironically, a lot of these millennials don't know how to do anything. There are devices that will record right to a hard drive.
Yeah.
But I think you want to record it to the laptop so you could just chop it off and like that.
Yeah, I'm missing a generation between the boomer and the millennial.
That's right. You want somebody in between. You want a Gen.
I don't have one of those.
Gen Xer.
Yeah.
Hey, great to talk to you, Lynn. I hope that helps. Leo, thanks for unmuting. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. If you need to use Snapchat, ask a millennial. Other than that. They're good for nothing, these millennials. They're good for nothing. You know what I said? Listen, I know a man who knows a man. His name is Johnny Jett, and he's our traveling guru. He is in Hawaii. Are you...
You're good. You know, when you played that, I thought that was you for the first second. I was like, oh, my gosh.
You're on vacation though. This is vacation for you, right?
No, I am actually not.
You're working. You're working.
I know vacation. Actually, I was brought over here by Hawaiian Airlines and Barclays Card because they just refreshed their Hawaiian Airlines World Elite MasterCard, which actually, you know, is a great deal right now. They have 50,000 bonus miles if you spend the certain amount. I think it's $4,000 within 3 months. But those 50,000 miles is enough for a free round trip ticket from the West Coast to Hawaii.
Oh.
And also, the reason why it's refreshed is because they're now adding, you get 3 points per dollar spent on Hawaiian Airlines, $2, which I didn't have before, on groceries, dining, and then $1 for everything else. And gas, by the way, for the $2.
Is that the airline you can get the ukulele on?
Exactly. So I was telling you, if you fly Air Island on Ohana by air, like let's say you're going to Molokai or Lanai,
yeah.
and you're on the – it's a
the
prop
little,
plane.
The little like putter, 50, puddle jumper, yeah.
I think it's 50 seats.
Yeah.
There's one ukulele on board. You can ask for it, and someone gave me the tip. Someone worked for Hawaiian, and I asked the flight attendant, and he looked at me. He's like, "Oh my God, how did you know about that?" And he went and got it, and he goes, "It's so dusty. No one's asked for it in months." And so anyway,
but do you play the ukulele?
I do not play. You know, I was driving the other passengers nuts, but you know.
So learn a song or two. It's not that hard. And then ask for the ukulele.
I'm not very musically inclined, but it's a great little, it's a great tip to, you know, just at least to do a pose for a photo if you want.
Oh, yeah. I love Hawaii. I have such a soft spot for Hawaii. You're right now in Kauai at the Grand Hyatt in Kauai. How nice.
Yeah, it's a beautiful pool, especially for a young one. So Jack's here with me, and he just loves this pool. It's a lagoon. The water's too rough out here for.
Oh, really? Oh.
Yeah.
I need a nice beach. Maybe I'll go somewhere else then.
It's just rough. The last few days, it's been rough.
Oh, okay.
But speaking of deals, they're actually Hawaii's on sale. I saw yesterday in Scott's Cheap Flights that $379 from certain spots around the country round trip. Also, I'm looking right now, Alaska Airlines from D.C. $554 round trip.
Is it because it's a summertime and it's kind of hot in Hawaii? Is that?
No. Actually, this is the busiest time right now.
It is
now and between Christmas and New Year's, this is the busiest time of the year. So these fares are not for right now. They're for September. October, I think, is the slowest time in Hawaii.
Why is that? Is it rainy?
No, it's just because all the kids are back in school.
Good. That's when I want to go.
It's not a big bit. Yeah. October's a great
time. I don't want to go when the kids are there.
But it can be rainy then, but that's not why.
Oh, who cares? Rain's nice. Yeah.
Because everyone's back in school. Right now, Australians are here because it's their winter break. There's a lot of them.
Oh, yeah.
But also, speaking of Australia, by the way, I just looked now. There's some really good deals to Australia. American Airlines from San Francisco to Sydney, $746 round trip. From L.A. to Melbourne, $763 round trip.
Wow. I mean,
that's unusual for Australia. So take a look at those.
I'll give you a plug. If you go to johnnyjet.com and sign up for his travel deals newsletter, he has two, Daily Travel Tip and the Travel Deals. These are the kinds of things that he puts out. Whenever there's something hot, you'll get it in the email.
And if I don't have time to make a newsletter, which like today because I'm running around, I'll tweet it out. So you can at least follow my Twitter.
Johnny Jet on Twitter.
And because I'm on the Garden Island, I thought I'd come up with a great garden app. So I love hiking. So one of the things when I hike around, and my dad always taught me to stop and smell the flowers. Well,
yes.
You know, sometimes people are like, "What's that flower?" I'm like, "I have no idea." So I did a little search, and gardenanswers.com, they have a free version on Android and iOS, and it instantly identifies 20,000 plants, over 20,000 plants. So you take a picture and you hit upload, and it will tell you what you're looking at. And I just did that last week when I was in New York at the Central Park Zoo. Actually, Natalie took a picture of me, tested it out, and it worked great. It told me exactly what the flower was. And for some reason, if you do stump the app, you can actually pay, I think it's $1 or $2, and send your photo to one of their horticulturists, and they'll reply within 24 hours and tell you everything about it.
So this is not a website. It's an app. It's on iOS and Android. It's called Garden Answers. The website is, as you said, gardenanswers.com.
But it's an app.
But you need the app. Yeah, the website can't help you.
No, the website will not help you. So
I've been using one called Snap Plant.
I was just about to mention that. So they charge $3.99 for that one. Oh no, sorry, Plant Snap. Is that
Plant
what you
Snap?
Said?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Yeah, Plant Snap. That's actually how I learned about this, where I got the idea, because it was in my Instagram feed. They sponsored, they were sponsoring an ad in there, and all of a sudden I was going through my thing.
I've used it quite a bit. It's not 100% accurate, but I think it's a hard thing to do, right?
I would think so. But yeah, I was actually going to talk about Plant Snap and write about it. But then when I was doing some research, people were saying, no, Garden Answers is better. First of all, it's free.
Yeah.
I mean, so you save $3.99 and it has more answers.
I'm going to get both and I'll compare them, because I'm going to see tonight the restaurant we go to every once in a while, a plant that they asked me, they said, "Do you know what this is?" And I said, "I don't know." And according to Plant Snap, it's an Albanian spurge, Euphorbia caraceus. But I am going to get my Garden Answers out and see if they say the same thing.
Yeah, I mean it's a great little travel app as well. Especially if you're hiking and you have Wi-Fi, you can definitely tell your friends. Oh, you don't have to let them know that you're using an app. You can say, "Hey, this is what this."
I happen to know my mom's like that. She doesn't need an app. She is the app.
Really? She knows. My sister's like too. Yeah, and I'm like, I have no idea. I barely know what a daffodil is.
All right, Garden Answers Plant Identification. That's your app. What's your site?
So you know what. I don't have a site today,
Johnny.
I want to mention a really good travel product that people should carry.
All right, that's even better. Okay.
Yeah, so gaffer tape.
Yes. We use gaffer tape here in the studio all the time.
Yeah, so I used to carry duct tape.
No, because it doesn't unstick.
Exactly. Actually, I might have mentioned, I don't know if I mentioned this once before with you, but
no,
anyway.
No, I don't think so.
Okay, good. I've been meaning to. Every week I put it in my notes, so I never have time to run it by.
So duct tape is the more common variety. You can repair shoes. You can make a wallet.
Suitcase.
But it's really sticky. Gaffer tape
it's
is
so
designed.
Sticky.
Yeah, gaffer tape is designed to be removed.
Exactly. And that's what I learned that from one of my buddies when I was actually Spud Hilton when I was up in San Francisco.
Oh, good old Spud. He knows all about the gaff. Here's a roll. It's expensive, though.
Actually, it's like $9 for a big roll on Amazon. That's what I bought a big roll, and then I just wrapped like around the pen, a small little version that I carry in my carry-on.
Oh, what a good idea. You don't have to carry the big roll. Just put a bunch of it on a pen or something.
That's what I do.
And it's smart.
I can pull it out right now. It's in my bag.
And what do you use it for?
I use it for a number of things besides repairing suitcases, which fortunately I don't have to do. Actually, I did last week. Natalie's away bag broke.
Oh.
So we use that. But also I use it when there's lights in the room bother me. You know, I'm a sensitive sleeper. So if there's like a bright light on the TV or on like
paint tape over the light switch, the LEDs, they're everywhere.
I put tape over it.
Yeah, but don't put tape over the LED on the smoke sensor.
Smoke alarm.
They'll get you mad. They'll make you mad. They'll get mad at you. Although because you do want to know that that's working.
Right.
I'm putting some on a pen right now. This is a good idea.
But I always take it off. So,
yeah, see, that's the beauty part is it's easy to take off.
And that's exactly because the duct tape, it would always leave this residue. And I was like, oh, my gosh. And also I use it because traveling with Jack, we need to make sure everything's baby proof. And some of these rooms have really sharp edges.
Yeah.
And we used to travel with little foam corners. But if I don't have them or we ran out of them, I will tape a towel to it.
Johnny's the best. Tape a towel. Always have a towel, too. That's another tip. JohnnyJet.com. Thank you, Johnny. We'll talk again next week. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Aloha.
Aloha. Aloha.
That was great. I don't know how you queued that music up so fast. And I really thought it was you for a second. I was like, oh my gosh.
I could do it if I only knew the words.
This
is good. This is a good tip, is put this right on the pen. You don't have to bring a big roll, but you can get about 5 feet on a pen. And now you're all set.
Yeah, actually, I'll show you mine so you don't think I'm full of it.
No. That's brilliant. I'm going to do this. This is a life hack.
It's really great. Here it is. Here's mine.
Look at that. Oh, you got quite a bit there.
Actually, this is around chapstick.
Oh, even better. And that way, it's a no-slip grip. Chapstick with a no-slip grip.
So this is what I put in my carry-on.
But is this strong enough to repair a suitcase malfunction?
For sure. I mean, Natalie's away bag cracked, and so we covered it up.
Yeah. Well, this is used in studios not for everything. That's, right. Gaff tape is like, and it tears too, which is nice. You can just tear a clean edge
off. Right after I brought the gaffer tape, I saw someone driving down the street. I'm pretty sure it was duct tape, but they literally had their whole
car duct taped together.
Their bumper taped on. I'm talking the whole bumper.
There. I'm putting that in my briefcase. That's very handy. Bumper, duct tape on.
So I'm glad you like that.
No, if I ever need it, I could steal a roll. That's for sure. We got a lot of gaff tape here. Very,
good.
Very popular here. But that is the key. I'll show it again because people don't know. Unlike duct tape, which you really have to have scissors, gaffer tape, it tears.
Right off.
It's fabric backed. So it tears, and it tears perfectly every time. So that's the real advantage of gaff tape, right?
I think we had to cannibalize the Mac Pro.
Yeah, we made a Mac Pro out of 10 rolls of gaff tape, but 6 rolls. But, that's like $80 for the gaff tape. So here, you can have this back. Thank you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I can't cool down. I got to keep going. And on the line, line 2, Tom in Vista, California. Hello, Tom.
Hello, Leo. How you doing?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
Good, good. Hey, I just called because I grew up on Long Island, and hop hog is a Native American word meaning sweet waters.
Oh, well, it's a good name, and but it's a terrible, it's as bad as Albuquerque to spell it, right?
I think it is pretty difficult to spell, yeah.
There's two U's in it, two P's, correct. A G, no, three U's is way too many U's.
No, there's two U's, two P's, and two A's.
Yeah. That's all you need to know about hop hog.
Right.
I'm saying it right, though, right?
Yeah, I think it's hop hog. Yeah.
Hop hog. Little emphasis on the hop.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
So anyway, I had some tech questions, but I wasn't prepared. I decided to dial you, and I got through the first time. So that's my comment. And I'll have to call back some of the time with my tech questions.
That's great. Tom, it's good. This is like a little mini vacation for me. Thank you, Tom. Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Tom from Hop Hog. Tim in Murrieta, California. Hello, Tim.
Hey, Leo. Thanks. So something just happened just yesterday. My wife and I were trying to we have iPhone 6s, iPhone 6 S's, both
okay.
of us.
Okay.
And so we're trying to hook her phone up to a smart TV using HDMI cable. And she hooks hers up, and it asks, do you trust this device? And then asks for her password, and she entered it, and nothing happened. The picture didn't come up on the screen. And the TV said that it received the HDMI input, received the signal. And she tried it a couple times, and no picture came up. So then we tried my phone, and nothing happened. No, do you trust this device? No, enter your password. Nothing happened.
Are you using the Apple device, the Apple cable, to hook up HDMI?
No, it's an Omni.
Yeah.
But it's worked before. We've both used our phones on it, and it's worked before.
Okay.
So then we had a friend of ours there.
Which service, what content are you trying to watch?
It's photos and video.
Oh, that shouldn't be copy protected. So there's something called HDCP, High Bandwidth Digital Content Protection, and it will prevent you from watching Netflix or Hulu, HBO, Amazon Prime, any premium content through that connection. They don't want you to do that because they're afraid you're going to steal it. But
yeah, these are photos downloaded to her photo album and a video downloaded to her. And well, but then she sent the same photos and video to another iPhone S. A friend of ours was there, also has an iPhone S, sent that airdropped to his phone.
And it worked.
He hooked his phone up and everything worked.
Okay. So it sounds like there's an issue. With a 6S.
And he actually suggested that it might be the iOS version. And the odd thing was, I have the latest iOS version. Nothing, and my phone didn't work at all. He had the oldest of the three of us, the oldest iOS version, and his worked.
Okay.
So I've got like an 11.4, and his was like a 10.2 or 10.9 or something. And my wife was somewhere in between us.
You know, it's interesting because I have a question in my email. I don't maybe it's from you, but I think it's not, with the same exact question. It sounds like they changed something in iOS 11.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking at it right now, some in the Apple discussions, and it sounds like they did not enforce copy protection until iOS 11. And they started doing that in iOS 11. Now, you could use an Apple TV if you had an Apple TV and AirPlay it. And it's my suspicion that Apple would prefer you to buy a $200 device to do this than use just an HDMI to lightning cable. So I am seeing this, now that I look at it, as being an issue with iOS 11. And I don't know of a fix for it. It sounds like something that Apple just decided to implement. There shouldn't be any copy protection on your pictures.
Right.
But maybe they're just blocking all HDMI output That's crazy. Can you, let's see how we could test this. You could try it to a monitor. If you had an HDMI monitor lying around, see if that worked.
Yeah, I do. Okay.
I would try that because it may also be the TVs blocking it. You know, HDCP, the way that this is set up, every device on the chain, which is the player, the cable, and the screen, all have to implement HDCP or it will not play. So it's conceivable that the TV is also blocking it. And that it, but then again, it worked with your friend's older iOS.
Yes.
It could also be that Apple has introduced a bug with iOS that they haven't fixed. I'm going to have to go home and play with this a little bit. I have iOS 12. I have the public beta on my iPhone and my iPad. So I can try and see if it's fixed with iOS 12. If it is, then it's a bug. It worked before, but that was that before you had iOS 11 installed?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah. And I am seeing some stuff about Apple in iOS 11 more strictly enforcing copy protection. But goodness gracious.
Is there
That's
a way
not copy
to,
protected material.
And is there a way to... If the photos... like personal photos on our phone, is there a setting for those to be protected or not protected?
I don't think so.
Okay.
It sounds to me like Apple's been overzealous. They are protecting something that shouldn't be protected. Or there's a bug and it doesn't work with the HDMI adapter you have, the Lightning to HDMI. Okay. It's, you know, if you had an Apple one and it didn't work, and that's what I have at home, so I will try it and report back tomorrow. But if you had an Apple one and it didn't work, then I would say there's an issue.
Okay.
But it could be that Apple iOS 11 is saying, well, I don't, you know, this is another thing Apple does do. This isn't one of ours. Was it a made for iPhone cable, an MFI certified cable? Do you know?
Probably not. It's Omni, and I don't know if they're.
So generally, when you buy cables with a Lightning adapter on it, anything to go with your iPhone, always make sure it's MFI certified. And sometimes even when you buy an MFI certified, we found that there are products supposedly MFI certified on Amazon that aren't.
Yeah.
So it'd be even better to buy it from Apple direct. Of course, that's going to spend a lot of money. I would try it with your monitor just to see if that works. Now, what are the workarounds for this? Well, one is to have an Apple TV. The other, which is not a great workaround, it's a $200 workaround. If you want to display it on the screen, if you had a smart TV, then there are ways to get those photos, say, to Google or, Google's photos that then has an app on the smart TV. Look on your smart TV about what apps. And sometimes it's enough, you know, the other thing you could do is copy it to a computer, then copy it to an SD card. Some TVs have SD card slots, your USB slots. Oh, yeah. So you'd have to get around the iPhone somehow. But if you use Microsoft's OneDrive, look on your TV and see if it supports any photo playback on any of the cloud services. And if it does, then you put that cloud service on your iPhone, make sure the photos are there, and it'll work.
But then if you use a SD card or USB, you don't have the interactive.
No, that's right.
Capability.
Well, you do, but the interactive capability is all in the TV remote.
Oh, in the remote. Okay. Yeah. And you can like play a video and do slideshow. And,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Got if it. Your TV supports it. Most smart TVs do.
Okay.
So I'd look at the TV.
Can I ask you another quick question on an unrelated matter?
Yes, sir.
So I got a Epson EcoTank, and I bought it based solely on your recommendation.
Thank you.
Had it for...
They're a sponsor, we should mention. Go ahead.
Yes, and less than a year, it started having lines going across, and I checked the ink levels and everything, and all the color, and all the ink levels are fine. And then I ran a diagnostics, and it says the color is all the color headers are good, and it's the black is the issue that has the lines.
Yeah, the lines usually mean the head. You have a clogged head. So in the menu, there is a nozzle cleaning routine.
And I did that.
You did those, and it didn't clean it.
The cleaning and the nozzle cleaning.
Yeah. I have always been of the opinion that an inkjet printer is not a good choice for light use. Epson has told me again and again, no, we coat these, and this isn't going to happen. I'll tell you what. Hang on the line. I'm going to get some information from you. I'll connect you with our folks at Epson, and maybe we can get it fixed for you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. How often do you print with it?
Well, we primarily print in black only. We hardly ever use the color, so I actually thought it was because maybe we weren't using the color.
No. What happens with inkjet nozzles? They get clogged.
Okay. But I'd say we print probably, we don't do a lot of printing, probably several times, maybe 2-3 times a week.
That's usually adequate.
We don't do like a lot of pages at a time.
Yeah, but that's usually adequate. What happens is after a few weeks, it'll dry out a little bit. And again, Epson has told me, because I say this all the time, and Epson says, no, don't say that because we coat these. And okay, whatever. I just, for light use, I don't like inkjet printers, but you're using it heavily enough, that shouldn't be an issue. It's under a year, so it should be under warranty. My suggestion would be...
Well, I think we've had it over a year now.
Over a year, okay.
The problem started in less than a year.
I see.
It's a 2550,
AT2550. Yeah, I'm going to put you on hold, and we're going to get your email address. Or if you want, you can email Leo at techguylabs.com, and I will connect you with the Epson reps.
And, okay.
And you can get an enhanced level of service and see if they can figure out what's going on. You've done all the maintenance routines though in the LCD.
Interestingly enough, I did the nozzle cleaning and then I did the head cleaning. When I did the head cleaning, it said it was going through the process, and then at the end of the process, it said communication error.
Oh. Have you done that? When you do the nozzle check, that's the way you can diagnose this, because it'll show you, it goes color by color, and okay. When you do the nozzle check, it'll show you, and you can see, oh, yeah, there's a line missing here. If there's
That's when it showed me that all the colors were good, and
yeah,
it was the black that had the line.
Yeah, so that means one of the nozzles in the black is clogged, and so it's not printing on that line. It's just a blank line across, right?
Yes.
If you've done all the cleaning routines, then you're right. That sounds like a seriously clogged nozzle. You shouldn't, but Epson may need to respond to this. I don't know what the solution is. I routinely will go through all the nozzle cleaning, but eventually gave up on inkjet printers. My home printer, because I only print once a couple of times a month.
Mm-hmm.
And I just got a laser printer because the nice thing about lasers is they can sit forever and still print. An inkjet cannot sit forever and print.
Okay.
My wife has an EcoTank in her office at home, and because she prints every day, it's not a problem at all. Seems like printing a few times a week, unless you went through a period of more than a few weeks where you were on vacation and you didn't print.
That's entirely possible.
Yeah. I would do a few more nozzle cleaning cycles, like keep doing it. Because what it is, it's just a clogged nozzle, and you got to squirt it out. And sometimes just doing multiple ones. Scooter X is saying when he was in training from Epson that if you do several in a row, the printer will switch to a more vigorous cycle. I've seen some printers which have two different levels of nozzle cleaning. One uses more ink than the other, so they want you to use the lighting. But you've got so much ink in that ink EcoTank, I would just keep doing it until it fixes it.
And let me ask you this: Should I set the printer at a, say, like do like a high quality?
Doesn't matter. The nozzle check doesn't care about that.
Okay.
So do the nozzle cleaning routine several times, and if it's not fixed after you do it 3 or 4 times, then send me an email and I will get you hooked up with Epson because they'll make you go through this.
Okay. All right. Perfect.
All right.
Thanks for your time.
My pleasure. I'm sorry you had the problem.
Thanks, Leo.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography. We've got smartphones. We've got smart watches. We've got all that jazz at 8888 Ask Leo. If you have a question, a comment, a suggestion, I'd love to hear from you. Amazon Prime Day coming up Monday. It starts halfway through Monday at noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern on Monday. And then runs all day Tuesday. So it's really Amazon Prime Day and a half now. And the idea, the theory behind Prime Day is lots of deals updated every hour on Amazon. You have to be an Amazon Prime member. So that's, from Amazon's point of view, the biggest point of this is get you to become a Prime member for $99. Although even, I think on Prime Day, they might even have a deal on that because they want to sign you all up. Amazon Prime members, there are lots of benefits. The chief benefit, I'm a member because I buy everything at Amazon. The chief benefit is free two-day shipping. So you get stuff fast. Prime Day deals, though, are not always great deals. And so just like Black Friday, it's good to have a little help. There are a couple of places I would recommend that you bookmark now. Before you buy, check. One is the New York Times website that I've been a fan of since they started, The Wire Cutter. Brian Lamb, who used to be at Gizmodo, started it. His theory of The Wire Cutter was, instead of, you know, reviewing a bunch of stuff and giving them 1 to 5 stars or whatever, let's just pick the best thing in any category. Because that's all people want. Like, what's the best wireless router? You know, what's the best credit card? And admittedly, not easy to say, well, this is the best or that's the best. But they kind of say, look, of all of them, this is the best. Sometimes they have a runner-up or a budget choice. Or sometimes they have a premium choice. But what's important is on Prime Day, they sit down, they get a bunch of people together. They look at every Prime deal. They compare it with other deals around the web, the normal price and so forth. And they say, this is a deal, this isn't a deal. So you can go to thewirecutter.com. Or follow their Twitter feed. This is how I do it, at Wirecutter Deals. They also have a daily deal newsletter. But if you follow at Wirecutter Deals, you'll find out before you buy, and I think that's the idea, whether this is really a good deal on Amazon Prime Day. The other place that I like is Thrifter. This is a new site, relatively new. I think it was founded within the last year, thrifter.com. And Thrifter also is going to follow Prime Day and give you suggestions. They also have a daily newsletter, et cetera, et cetera. So I think between the two, you'll know, A, you'll find the best deals, right? And B, you'll know whether they're decent or not. Some deals maybe aren't such good deals. So thrifter.com and thewirecutter.com, my suggestions. Prepare yourself, gird yourself for Amazon Prime Day. Or, as many do, and I'm going to do, recuse yourself. Just take that day off, those 30 hours. Take them off. I'm going to skip that. Don, Covina, California, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Don. Don, are you there? Hello, Don.
Yes, I'm here.
Welcome. What can I do for you?
Well, I need to get a TV for a patio, large screen. And I know they make them specifically for outside, but they're about 4 times the price.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if you have suggestions.
I don't know much about outdoor televisions. There's two problems, of course. There's the weather, which is a big issue, right. But also there's an issue of brightness. The best TVs aren't that bright. So you're going to want to get a TV, certainly an LCD TV that has a particularly bright screen. And there are brands specifically for that. One of the popular outdoor brands is something called Sunbright. That's a good name, isn't it? But as you point out, they are expensive, and they may not be the best TVs out there. And that's kind of the issue. I would guess that they're water sealed or weatherproofed in the same way that phones and cameras can be weatherproofed. And they'll have some rules about where to install it as well. I'm looking at a website called Outer Audio at outeraudio.com. It's an outdoor audio and video site. And they like the Sunbright TV, the high end, the signature particularly. But they have some good information on that website about outdoor TVs. You certainly wouldn't want to put a normal TV for indoor use outside. It's not the brightness so much, because you can get bright TVs there are plenty of rooms that can't be darkened, you know, big bright picture windows. And so LCD TVs, typically LED backlit LCD TVs, are usually bright enough. But you, more importantly, you want the weatherproofing. Almost all the TVs I'm looking at say, please put them in the shade. That's another issue. And the reason you want to not be in direct sunlight, well, there are two reasons. One, it's hard to see the screen. And two, it will then really heat up that TV, and that is death to electronics. So, you know, I would really be careful about where picking a spot on your patio that is shaded, as shady as possible. There is a company called Mirage Vision that takes Vizio TVs, which we know are very good. We really like the Vizio TVs. Both Scott Wilkinson and I love them. They take Vizio TVs and weatherproof them. So I would look at the Mirage Vision as well. We know those would be good TVs. They make 4K UHD TVs. They're designed to be in a range of temperatures and in moisture. Not rain, obviously. Don't put them out in the rain. It's got internal weatherproofing that'll keep, you know, humidity from being a problem. And so I think that's probably a, you know, if I were going to pick one for myself and I didn't want to get the sun bright, I would take a look at the Mirage Vision, because they use Vizio tubes, which are really, I think, very good. I'm not sure what Sunbright uses, whose TVs they use. I'm looking here and I don't see any information on their site. But it's almost certain that none of these companies make their own TVs. They take existing televisions and weatherproof them. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. We're going to get back to your calls in just a bit. You stay right here. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. Line 4, George Victor, Montana. Hello, George.
Hello, Leo.
Welcome.
Thank you. My wife's phone, getting to the question, is that her phone and my phone both, when we're on Facebook,
yeah,
all of a sudden the phone just goes black.
It's trying to tell you something there, George. It's saying,
yes,
get off of that Facebook. It's no good for
you. You're right.
What kind of phone do you have, George?
They're iPhones.
And what generation?
What's yours?
How old is it? Is it iPhone 6, 7?
My wife is the 7 Plus.
7 Plus. Well, that's very recent.
And mine, I think, is 6.
Both of them do it, and it goes blank and just black, right?
Yeah, black.
And then does it come back, or does it not come back?
You have to push the app button for it, then it comes back.
Oh. Do you have a case? Let me just ask you this, because this was happening to my wife. Do you have a case on those phones?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. So she had an OtterBox, which she likes because, you know, you can't destroy the phone. It's like the OtterBox is like armor for the phone. But what we found, she was complaining about the same thing. And we found, this is just one possibility. I'm going to tell you some other things it could be too, but just one possibility. That she found that the case was squeezing the screen off. You know, that button that you think of as an on-off button isn't an on-off button. It's a screen-off button. That's all it does. So she was thinking that something was wrong with the phone, but it was going blank because without her realizing it, as she was holding the phone, the case was squeezing it. So that is what I would first try, is take off the temporarily. I know you want to keep a case on it, but this is what I had her do. Temporarily take off the case and see if it seems better. The other thing she does to fix this is restarts the phone regularly. Now, I don't think you need to restart it every day, but every computer should probably be restarted once in a while, even an iPhone. So restarting it is more than just pressing that on-off switch. You have to press it, and you have to press the volume key at the same time. Actually, it depends on which phone you've got. Your phone, you just press it for a while, and then it'll say slide to power off. You want to see that and slide it, turn it back on again. See if that helps, because sometimes that does. Have you been keeping it up to date? Have you been adding the software updates when they offer them to you?
Yeah, my wife is real good at it. I usually wait till I get into town where I can get
not a bad idea. It's you know, as long as you do it eventually, it's fine to wait a little bit. Sometimes those updates actually cause problems that you might be avoiding by waiting. But as long as you're keeping it up to date, Scooter X said that there used to be a problem with iOS 9, which is two versions ago. iOS 9, the Facebook would go dark under iOS 9. So make sure you are using the latest version of iOS. You should be on iOS 11 by now.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Okay,
you go to General, you go to Software Update, and you make sure you're on the latest. It's interesting it's happening to you both.
Yeah, I was wondering if it was like through Verizon. We got that can thing sitting out. I call it a can out on the side of the house. And then we use their modem.
Yeah, that shouldn't give you a, that shouldn't do that.
Okay. But they slow us way down. They say that can uses half of my data.
Oh, I bet it does, because probably a lot of your computing now is on your iPhone, not on your regular computer, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So when you press, so it goes blank or black, and you press the on-off switch, and it comes back, and everything's okay, right? Or does it go, Facebook's still running, right?
You push on-off, then your screen comes up, and then you push the icon to get back into Facebook.
Oh, but Facebook's not there. You're not still in Facebook?
No, it don't open back up into
the Okay.
It flips back to the main screen.
So that means, something's going on with Facebook then. So make sure you have the most recent Facebook. In fact, what I would do, both of you, is uninstall it. You know, press it, the icon until it jiggles. Press the X. That gets rid of it. And then download it again. Because that sounds like a bug in Facebook. And I'm looking at it, I'm looking at some forums, and apparently this actually can be a problem with the Facebook app. These posts are dated a few years ago, so I don't know, but it sounds, maybe get rid of Facebook and reload it and see if that fixes it.
Okay, when you do that, does it give you back all... Does your information stay with the Facebook when you open it?
Yes, but you may be required to log in again. But don't do it if you don't remember your Facebook password. But if you remember your Facebook password, it's okay. Yeah, it'll forget your password, but all of the stuff you've put on Facebook will stay there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And does this happen? It happens. You've already launched Facebook and you've been using it, right?
Yeah, for
years.
Yeah,
so, no, but I mean, in this particular, when this happens, it's not the first time. It's not when you hit the Facebook icon, it opens and goes black. You're using it a little bit, and then it goes black?
Yeah. That's right.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds like there's something wrong. If it's not your case, it's not your iOS version, if you've updated it, you're rebooting your phone every week or so, then that sounds like a problem with... Okay. Oh, now wait a minute. Now I'm looking at a post. iPhone black screen bug after iOS update. Now this is something that happened recently with iOS 11. A lot of people had problems with iOS 11. It's not specific to Facebook, it looks like. Let's see what the fix is. Yeah, it seems like older models. Disable Siri by going to settings and Siri. Lock your phone screen by pressing sleep. Press and hold the home button. Activate voice control. Call somebody, then take the... And you may experience this bug. That's a crazy fix that they're suggesting, so I don't think so. If it's a problem with iOS 11, they'll update it. And I have not seen that problem. I'm on iOS 12 now, but I haven't seen that problem. Of course, I stopped using Facebook, so...
You're smart.
Yeah.
Well, I know why you. I know why you.
That's my
you,
wife in the background.
Yeah, I hear. What's your name?
Sharon.
Hi, Sharon. Nice to meet you.
I've heard about your show all the time.
Oh, thank you, George. So, I know why you use Facebook, because that's how you stay in touch with family and friends. I completely understand that. What happened for me is I just found every time I looked at Facebook, I just got angry.
Yeah.
Right? It affected my emotional stability. So for a while, I said, well, I'm just not going to look at it. But as long as that little blue F sits on my screen, I'm going to hit it sometimes. So I just finally deleted it. And my life is so much happier now. But
I believe that.
If you've got grandkids or kids and this is how you stay in touch, I completely understand.
Well, people don't use the phone anymore.
Right. They don't call you. They don't write. No. They post on Facebook, right?
Yeah.
That's we're all hostages to this, unfortunately.
That's pathetic.
I wish there was something better. I like Facebook has a photo app called Instagram that I like because it's just pictures. Mm-hmm. And pictures don't make me unhappy usually. But I just find that every time I look at Facebook, I just noticed my gut was all churned up. Twitter too.
Well, you know, we got rid of Startup TV.
Same thing.
So we use Facebook a lot for our news.
Yeah.
Different things.
By the way, we've learned that's a very bad idea. But you're not alone. More than half of America gets its news primarily from Facebook. That's a problem, too. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
So what's the best thing to do for your news?
Well, Apple has an app called Apple News that I would take a look at. That's a pretty good app. And what they do is they pull from a lot of different sites. You can customize it. And then you can also, if you don't like, you know, seeing one source or another, you can say, I don't want to see anything more from that. And then it'll watch as you use it, and it'll say, oh, they really seem to like this or that, and they'll give you more of that. So I like Apple News. Google has a similar product called Google News. Between the two of them, I'm pretty well covered for, like, my news. In fact, Google News is nice because it knows your location, and it pulls up my local paper, which is a little tiny, small-town paper.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, so I can see, you know, if there's anything going on around town. So that's you can download that in the App Store. It's called Google News.
Okay.
And so between the two of those, that pretty much fills my news needs. And you can have, you know, you can have network news on there, too. You don't have to limit it to just blogs. They have TV news on there, too, and stuff. Just little clips, though.
Right.
Little clips.
Right. I saw there's one, but it's a paid one, CRTV. I don't know if you're familiar with it.
Yeah, I would, unless you want to watch video particularly, I would just use Apple News and Google News, and they will give you clips. So if you need video, you can see the video.
And right.
Yeah, and that, and they, I think they do a very good job of putting news up that's not crazy.
Cool.
Yeah. Facebook, you don't know what the source is.
Oh, and no, it's all bad.
Exactly.
It's bad.
Yeah, and then Facebook, what Facebook
really
does
true.
That
he
makes
did
it
a lot of research.
Yeah, good for you. And what Facebook does is it notices what you read and it gives you more of the same. So it can actually make you more crazy.
Right, exactly. Yeah, it's all bad.
But I know you're in Montana. You want to? I bet you. Your family and friends are not nearby. You want to? You know, you want to keep up with the kids, and so that's what it's good for.
Mm-hmm.
I think you can probably, modify Facebook if you work on the stream. To give you more of the family and friends and less of the other stuff, but I just gave up. I just gave up.
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah. I know we're about at that point. Aren't
yeah.
Hey.
Yeah.
Great.
But anyway, try uninstalling and reinstalling Facebook. I bet you it's odd that it's happening to both of you. It could be that Verizon thing, but I don't think so.
It's just been within the past couple of weeks, too, and that's why we thought maybe it was Verizon.
Yeah, or Facebook pushed an update that wasn't good.
Oh, okay.
Right?
I hope it's not. How do you know if you're hacked?
You're not hacked.
Okay.
Your iPhone, it is impossible to hack an iPhone. You'd have to have a nation state out to get you. You haven't made enemies in Turkey, have you?
No.
Okay, then you're okay. Seriously, it's that hard. It has to be an elite hacker specifically going after you, George. You know, it has to be like you guys
made some enemies.
Right. That'd have to be a very bored. Yeah.
If Vladimir Putin doesn't like you, then maybe. But otherwise, you're all right.
Oh, okay.
Well, I had an interesting thing. A person that I know on Facebook that I'm friends with told me that she had been hacked. And she said, so change your password. And I thought, I don't change my password.
Well, you can every once in a while. It's not a bad idea, but
she's telling me to change my password.
Right, because she's been hacked. No, don't worry about that. Yeah, and she probably has. A lot of times we get calls all the time from people who say they've been hacked, and it's not that they've been hacked. It's just you. But now with all the news, this is another side effect of that bad news thing is everybody's terrified they're being hacked. The Russians are coming. The Russians are coming. Hey, it's nice to talk to you, Tooth. I really appreciate your listening. Take care. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. If you have a question, a comment, a suggestion, if you want help getting off the Facebook, Justin in San Diego, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi,
hey,
Justin.
Hey, Leo, thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure. Thanks for calling.
I was just listening to the last couple from Montana, and since I updated my iPhone, my proximity sensor's been really, really sensitive, like 3-4 inches away.
Oh, you think that's what's happening? Because there's a sensor in there that blanks the screen, is supposed to blank the screen when you put the phone to your ear.
Yeah, so when I put my finger near the screen, it'll sense it and it'll turn off the screen.
That's a great tip. George and Susan, if you're listening, make sure that when you... I bet you that's what's happening to my wife, too. Where is that proximity sensor?
It's right above the speaker. It's a little dot.
Okay. It's a little dot right above the speaker. So it's at the bottom of the screen?
Yeah, the earpiece speaker.
Oh, the earpiece speakers. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, there's a little dot up there. And that's the idea is, of course, the thing is it never works right. It either works when you don't want it to, or it doesn't work when you got your phone to your ear and your ear presses the mute button. Has that ever happened to you? Happens to me all the time.
It happened to me, so I imagine maybe they made it more sensitive for that reason.
Yeah, but maybe, okay, so you're holding it wrong.
Yeah.
Hold it a little lower. Okay, that's a good tip. Thank you.
But anyway, my question was about my mother-in-law's MacBook Pro.
Okay.
So about a week ago, she gave me a call and said that, she turned it on and she got the blue screen and said, if you want to unlock your computer, call us.
What?
So I figured it's some sort of ransomware, which I thought was kind of rare on a MacBook, but she downloads a lot of weird stuff, I guess. And then today...
The call us number was not Apple. It was somebody else.
It was somebody else. Yeah.
Oh, man. Now, it's possible. First of all, Apples don't do blue screens. Was it a blue screen?
She's sending me a picture of it. I'm not with
her. Does
it
look like a Windows blue screen? Because I'll tell you what, that's a fake.
Like a dump screen.
Yeah, the Apple, there's only one screen I know of on the Apple. It's called a kernel panic screen. And it's gray. It has a sad Mac on it. It is very unique. And if she's not seeing that screen, it could be she's being spoofed. That she's at a website that on the web with JavaScript, you can do a whole bunch of crazy things, including full screen, something that looks like, and it freezes the mouse. By the way, I just found out, Steve Gibson, our security guy, just told me, it's possible to freeze the mouse on a website that makes you feel like your system's unusable. Except it's completely usable. It's just that your mouse pointer won't move. And it could be that. So one thing for her to
check that out, because one thing she uses, I think it runs off Java. She uses it's a web-based program, and it's for cutting vinyl stickers out.
Yeah.
That's
not necessarily bad, but you're right. If she then has Java turned on as a plug-in for her browser, that's very dangerous.
Okay, I'll check that out for you.
Yeah, so make sure that what you can do is say, you can use this plugin only on this site, but normally always ask before you load Java on a web page. That's number one. Now, remember, Java is different than JavaScript. But JavaScript, you really can't disable. All the web uses it. It's way too necessary for almost every page. But it is possible to do things in JavaScript that appear to be a hack. And so if it doesn't say it's a kernel panic and has a sad Mac on it, it's a grayish screen. If it doesn't say that, in fact, I'm sure it doesn't because it says call. There is no message on the Mac that says that. So it's spurious. Her system probably isn't hung. She just thinks it is.
But
so if you can get her out of the browser.
Screen.
Yeah, just get her alt tab.
She's on a Windows machine.
She's on a Windows or Mac?
No. It sounds like they would have.
Yeah, blue screen is Windows.
Thinking it was Windows. Yeah.
Yeah. But I bet you it's not. Well, obviously it's not a Mac error message. Wouldn't have a phone number on it. But what I'm thinking is she isn't really hacked. It's a website that has locked her cursor, filled the screen with an error message, and then says, "Oh, you can't use your computer anymore." We've seen this. This happens on Windows too. It's a unfortunate feature in JavaScript, which needs to be turned off and probably will be. The way to figure this out is to get her out of that. And it may be that you can alt tab out of that. It may be that you can just shut down the computer. But it's very unlikely that she's actually been hacked.
Okay. You know, if they somehow did get a ransomware on there and then they decided it's not worth it, this person's not going to pay for it, they could turn it off. And should I?
Well, if so,
anyway, out of caution.
The real ransomware would actually not do that, not lock up the computer. It would encrypt all her files, and you'll know immediately if that's happened. Can you physically visit her?
Yes. I'm
okay.
Today.
Oh, okay. You'll know immediately if it was really ransomware. There is ransomware on the Mac. It's much less prevalent, but you just told me she does all sorts of terrible things. So terrible in our parlance. Yeah, you know, because she goes to sketch sites or she's not careful about what she downloads. It is absolutely possible. The Apples are not invincible. That's just a lot less common because there's a whole lot more Windows machines and they're a lot easier to infect. So bad guys focus on Windows mostly. So, yeah, you'll know immediately. If you can turn off the machine, it's okay to turn off the machine. Just turn it off, you know, press and hold the on-off switch till it goes off. Reboot it. If it reboots normally, she's fine.
Okay. Well, I appreciate it.
My pleasure. There aren't, as far as I know, there's nothing like malware bytes for the Mac because there just isn't much call for it. You know, a program that scans for malware. If you see other evidence, and you know, here's a few things to do. Look in the launch daemons. There's two system folders on Macintosh. There's one for the user in the home folder, and there's one at the root level for the entire computer. Look in kernel extensions and launch daemons folders to see if something odd is getting launched or installed on the kernel. And it's sufficient just to delete those from the folder or move them out of the folder. Oh, there is a malware bytes for the Mac OS, Scooter X says. I still wouldn't use it. I'm not a big fan of malware bytes. That's probably why I'm not up on what they offer. Don't recommend it. You can do this. If there's anything going on, you'll see it immediately. Most likely, what's going on is something I did not know about until I learned about it this week on our Security Now podcast. Steve Gibson's our security guy. There is a way to freeze the browser using JavaScript that looks like your computer's what tech people call hung, dead. And then if you wanted to really mess with somebody, you'd put up a screen that says your computer is broken. If you ever want to see your files again, call this number and give us money or whatever. The fact they're saying call this number usually means we can repair it. You'll pay us $300 and we'll fix it. Don't do that. The mouse isn't moving. The cursor is just frozen solid. Maybe the keyboard is also not responsive. That actually isn't a hack. It's something that a website can do, shouldn't be able to, but can do. And something that really, is easy to get out of. You just reboot the computer. But you'll want to think about going back to that site again. That maybe is not a great site. Let me read this Steve Gibson. This is the Steve Gibson thing. Clever hack tricks users into panicking and believing a spoofed browser warning. Turns out a browser freezing is a thing which is often used to frighten people into believing some nonsense about their computer being affected and their computer is being locked into. Please phone the following toll-free number to receive technical support.
This is part of a scam, which winds up with the scammers taking the victim out of their credit card, talking the victim out of their credit card info in order to pay them to have their machine unfrozen. So this comes from Malwarebytes. They describe a scam using a new technique for locking up Chrome, but I bet you it's possible in other browsers as well. The cross-browser web API has a function, windows.navigator.ms/save or open blob, which provides for locally storing and retrieving files. But this, I get it. This is an asynchronous operation, which takes the OS significantly longer to achieve than it takes JavaScript to request. So what you do is you create a loop, a JavaScript loop, saying open this file, open this file, open this file, open this file, or save to this file, save to this file, save to this file, and the requests become backlogged, the OS becomes backed up with work, pinning the system's CPU at 100% utilization, the browser's UI becomes completely unresponsive. But just before launching this attack, the logjam attack, the malicious JavaScript puts up a warning explaining that their ISP has blocked their PC due to its infection, they need to pay or whatever. You can't close the window because the browser's frozen and completely unresponsive, can't even be terminated. So Control-Alt-Delete doesn't even work. Back in February, Chrome fixed the problem, which also affects Firefox and other non-Microsoft browsers, including Opera, Vivaldi, and Brave. Sounds like a WebKit exploit. Well, Firefox doesn't use WebKit. According to a page on Google's Chromium bug tracker, the underlying bug was fixed with the release of Chrome version 65 in mid-February. But it resurfaced with Chrome 67 and is once again being actively exploited. Later updates in the same thread showed that other users were also experiencing browser freezes. Okay. Windows users, says Steve, can press Control-Alt-Delete, then select Task Manager to manually close the browser process. Mac OS users have the Force Quit feature. I don't know, though, if you'll be able to access that without the mouse. So the best thing to do is just shut down the computer. Wow. I'm wondering if it is on the Mac because, and I said this to Steve, the function is window.navigator.ms save or open blob. That MS to me means Microsoft. But they may have named it that just because they named it that. How do you access Force Quit on the Mac without the mouse? I don't know. How do you do that? Hosanna says you can, but I don't know of a way to do that. Hosanna, how? Hosanna. Hosanna. Okay, Control-Alt-Delete works on Windows. Option-Command... Escape. Option, Command.
And usually, if there's something that's not running, it's selected.
Right.
Selecting. Maybe the cursor key.
Right. Okay. That's good to know. Okay. So here we go. Option, Command, Escape, and it'll pop up that. I didn't know about that. Well, I knew about it, but I forgot. That's probably more likely.
You just don't run software that crashes.
Haven't you had to use it ever? I believe in miracles. Where are you from, you sexy thing? He's from Disneyland in beautiful downtown Manhattan. Did you go to Manhattan Henge, Dick D. Bartolo, Mad's Maddest Writer?
No, I went to the one earlier this month.
What was that?
Manhattan Henge. I went to 72nd Street and nice. It was fun.
I saw pictures of people at Manhattan Henge too. And there were crowds with their selfie sticks and
And standing in the middle of Broadway.
Yeah.
Traffic wasn't happy.
Completely safe to do in New York. Drivers are very, very generous.
Yes, exactly.
Never.
Oh, Stonehenge. Oh, yeah. Just take your time
taking that picture. Hey, I'm driving here. Yeah. Get out of the way, you moron.
Come back tomorrow when there's no traffic.
Dick DiVartolo is Mad's Maddest Writer. We call him a gizwiz because he's a gizmo wizard, always brings us fun gizmos and gadgets to play with. What do you have this week for us, Dickie?
Well, it is fun because, you know, it's hot weather, yes. And I'm going to do the latest Get Wet toy, okay? So in 2016, A company came out with a game called Wethead. You put this helmet on, looked like a construction hat.
Yeah.
You filled it with water.
Oh, dear.
And then there were all these little rods sticking in it. Oh, and you did a spinner, and it told you how many rods you had to remove. And if you didn't get wet, you passed it on to the next person. And the loser was the one who got soaked.
That sounds like fun. Do it outside, kids.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Then last year we got Soggy Doggy.
Soggy Doggy.
A cute little doggy in a tub. And you press buttons and the soggy dog gets wet. And then you do the spinner and you move around. And at some point, someone's going to turn the faucet to shower the dog. And the dog is going to start shaking.
And you all get wet. Oh, yep. That sounds like fun.
Yes, 2018.
Yes, the newest.
Watermelon Smash.
Oh, Gallagher would love this.
Oh, yes, exactly. Okay, so you fill the tank with water.
Yeah.
You could fill it with ice water if you really want to have some fun.
Yeah.
You close the watermelon. Same deal. Spin the spinner.
Yeah.
And then there's a little lever at the bottom of the watermelon and handles at the side of the watermelon. That's how many times you have to bring the melon down against your head.
What? You have to crack it against your head?
Yeah, well, not crack it. Just pull it down and the lever, each time you pull it down, the lever releases a ratchet.
Oh.
And the ratchet starts moving, and then you pass it on to the next person. And at some point, the ratchet is going to open the water tank.
Yeah.
And then you sort of know it's going to happen. But then when it does happen,
you get all wet.
You get all wet. So
I want to see that. You got to do that in slow motion. I'm watching the video on Dick's website, gizwiz.biz.
Links to all three. All three of them are still available because they were very big sellers.
Oh, I bet they were.
Yeah. And Wethead's like $15. Wethead's 15. Watermelon is still $19.99.
Oh, I can see the kids having a great time with this.
And then if you're a real killjoy, it comes with fake watermelon seeds.
Oh, fun.
So if you're playing indoors and you know mom doesn't want to get anything wet.
You could do seeds instead,
The seeds will, plastic seeds will fall.
I think if mom wants to do it, she should fill it with vodka.
Well, that's what Dennis does. He just says, I'm having a drink, Dennis. He just says, I'm playing Watermelon Smash.
I'm playing Watermelon Smash. Oh, that sounds like fun. Dick D is at his website is gizwiz.biz. He's the Gizwiz, right? So gizwiz.biz. If you click the Gizwiz Visits the Tech Guy, you can see him playing with the Watermelon Smash, smashing against his head and getting a little damp. You could also play the What the Heck Is It contest for a chance to win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine. Just identify a picture, close-up picture of some gizmo or gadget from his gadget warehouse. Have you ever counted how many things are in your gadget warehouse?
I would say $95,000 worth.
That's not the value of the objects. That's the amount he's spent in rent.
That's the value of 30 years of paying $300 to $400 a month.
Crazy, man.
To store crap.
Junk. It's junk.
Junk.
It's junk. It's junk. It's junk. You might as well just put a watermelon on your head and smash it in half. It's junk. Exactly.
It's junk.
Dick D. Bartolo. This one's going to the Gadget Warehouse, I have a feeling.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for being on the show every week. We appreciate it. Don't forget Dick's podcast where he talks about stuff like this, lots of stuff like this, with his co-host Chad Johnson. It's called Gizwiz TV at gizwiz.tv. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Next week. Bye.
Now, let me talk a little bit about this. Our friend Steve Gibson, he's kind of my security guru. We do a podcast called Security Now, and he talked about this particular hack this week. He says it was discovered by Malwarebytes. It affects a number of browsers, Chrome, Firefox, Opera, Vivaldi, Brave. It may affect others. It takes advantage of a function in JavaScript called save or open blob. And what this function does is it either saves something to the hard drive or open something from the hard drive. So let's say a website wanted to save a file or maybe save some settings. It could do that. But it turns out that it's very easy to say it in the website. It's a little slower to execute on the machine. So what the website can do is say it over and over again. Save this, save this, save this, save this, save this. What happens is eventually your operating system comes so backed up that the CPU goes to 100% and it freezes your mouse. And it looks like your machine is dead. Right before they do that, though, they put up a sign saying, you know, your machine's broken, the ISP is blocking it, whatever, something to get you to call a number so they can extract some money out of you. Here's the fix. If you're on Windows, Control-Alt-Delete still works. It might be slow, be patient, then select Task Manager and close the browser. On a Mac, like our caller's aunt had, there's a force quit feature, which I had forgotten about, but my staff reminded me. It's Option, Command, Escape. Command, Option, Escape on the Macintosh keyboard, the Windows key, the Mac key, the fan key is the command key, right? So Command, Option, Escape. That'll pop up a selector that'll say force quit applications. Usually it'll show the application that's frozen, but if it doesn't, if it, you know, select the browser and force quit, everything will be back to normal. That'll be it. You'll be back to normal. Everything will be fine. There is no infection. It's a known flaw. All right? All right. Thank you for calling and asking about that. I did not know about this. Thanks again to Steve Gibson for bringing it up. So we now know. Control-Alt-Delete on a PC and close the browser, or Command-Option-Escape on a Mac, close the browser, and everything will be fine. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Have a great geek. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.